Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 3. Chapter 5. Stella Bish agreed to Dex's fee schedule without any negotiation and transferred a substantial retainer to Dex's escrow account on the Cubicle Men system. The organization would take a small percentage for overhead, but Dex would easily keep enough to cover his expenses for a few months. He'd briefly thought about suggesting some kind of barter for his rent, but it seemed too complicated, especially with Bish's fragile emotional state. She'd left his office after extracting a promise to provide her with regular updates, and had managed to leave behind a lingering scent of perfume. Dex inhaled the woman's fragrance and pondered her effect on him. He knew that her seductive qualities were calculated as part of her business persona, and he was, in many ways, actually repelled by her personally. She had been more of an impediment than a help in his previous dealings with her, and he knew that she had no qualms about using anyone and everyone she came across to her advantage. That being said, they shared uncommon proclivities, and Dex felt himself drawn to her through a strange sense of kinship. He also had to admit to himself that he failed to be unmoved by her very real plea for help. Dex was, he knew, a sucker for a beautiful woman in distress. He limped out of the office and stretched. The moon was bright in the sky, and Dex had his apartment system untinted through a small window. He generally saw little natural light, and the moonlight was better than no light. In fact, Dex quite enjoyed its soft white glow. He used the lav and poured a large glass of water. He drank it down while pinging Annabelle. Being on the same schedule made sharing time together easy, and they usually spent an hour or two at their favorite watering hole in M-City. On rare occasions, Dex had coaxed her to join him at La Retro, but most days after work they met at Monty's. After the previous days at her apartment, Dex knew to suggest the M-City location. He linked in first and found himself materializing in the middle of the small gin mill, facing the wood and brass bar. Instead of finding a table first, Dex walked up to the bar and spoke to the non-human bartender. "Evening, Jim," Dex said, causing the bot to pay attention to him. "What'll it be?" the smart program asked. "The usual," Dex replied, knowing that the bar's system kept a record of his every order and would know that he requested stim-free rum and ginger beer 9 times out of 10. "You want a pack of smokes with that?" the bot asked as it mixed Dex's virtual drink. "Sure," Dex answered, and palmed the red and gold pack that Jim placed in front of him. He took the drink and felt the icy, cool humidity of the condensation on the glass. The intensity of the sensations he experienced with his newly upgraded interface still unnerved him, but he was getting much better at managing the difference between what his physical body felt and what his body seemed to experience online. He took a sip of the drink, enjoying the taste and feeling of the spicy sweet liquid roll over his tongue, and walked over to a small booth in the shadows. He sat and checked the time on his head-up display. He was early by a few minutes, and Annabelle was generally very punctual. He picked up the package of cigarettes and ran a thumbnail into the cellophane, opening the pack. He tossed the wrappings into the middle of the table and watched as they disappeared in what looked like a shower of sparkles. He lit one and felt the tinging sensation of smoke drawn deep into his lungs. He blew out a plume of blue smoke and through the haze saw Annabelle walking toward him. She was, in many ways, as different from Stella Bish as a woman could be, but Dex had to admit that both of them were beautiful. Of course, most avatars in M-City were beautiful, But unlike many people, Annabelle and Bish both wore avatars which looked somewhat similar to their physical bodies. Dex knew that Annabelle had used physical cosmetic adjustment to get there, and he guessed that Bish had probably done the same. He couldn't be bothered with putting any great effort into his physical form. The complex nutrient mix and the food bricks he ate sculpted his body into a thin, muscular shape, as well as ensuring a healthy and long life. Beyond that, he didn't really care about his looks. But he was happy to admire others who did put in the effort. Annabelle wore a simple pair of slim trousers, the same color as her hair, which she had changed to a dark auburn. Above the ochre pants, she wore a clingy cream t-shirt decorated with the image of one of the old paintings she favored. She'd tried to educate Dex on abstract art, but he could never get past the seeming randomness of the colors and patterns. As Annabelle got closer, though, he thought he recognized the design on her chest. "What's that?" he asked as she approached. "Kandinsky?" She smiled and leaned over for a kiss. "I think you might just be turning into an antiquated art lover after all," she said, settling into the seat next to Dex. "Nope," he said. "It still looks like the aftermath of an explosion in a paint store to me. I just recognize the explosion as all." Annabelle laughed and shook her head. "You just want to be a Philistine, I can tell." "And you just want to show off your new dictionary, apparently," Dex countered. He waited while she ordered a drink from the table's automatic menu. The space between them seemed to shiver, and a pink libation appeared in front of Annabelle. Dex couldn't tell by looking, but he knew from experience that, unlike his own beverage, hers was most likely a delivery system for some kind of neurostim. Dex didn't care. He'd poured a real rum and water back in his apartment to sip. To each her own poison, he figured. They clicked virtual glasses and drank, then Dex asked, "So, how was your day?" "Nothing special," Annabelle said. "Meetings, more meetings, and a few minutes of real work. This move east is unbelievably complicated." "I thought the Eastern Zone trains were run by Aronson," Dex said. "What's Omnitrack doing in their zone?" "Beats me," Annabelle said. "Pushing into the competitors' territory is what's causing most of the problems, but the higher-ups have decided that this is what's happening, so, damn it all, we have to make it fly. It's a pain in the ass, is what it is. But enough of my woes. How was your day?" "You would not believe who darkened my door this afternoon," Dex said. "Who?" she asked. "Stella Bish," Dex said, wondering what Annabelle's reaction would be. At first, she seemed not to recognize the name. Then her face became stormy. "What did that—" she seemed to struggle for the right word. "The harlot, shyster, woman want with you?" Dex laughed. "Tell me how you really feel about her," he said. He spent the next half hour telling Annabelle about the problems Bish was encountering, and partway through the story, Annabelle softened. "I don't think I'm ever going to like that woman," she said. "But I can't imagine how awful that must be. How could a person live without access?" She shivered. "What do you think is going on?" "I was hoping you might be able to shed some light on that," Dex said. "She said that her technician couldn't find anything wrong after the first incident," Annabelle confirmed. "I didn't get a copy of the report," Dex said, "but that's what she told me." "I'd like to see a report of the scans," Annabelle said, "and maybe do a scan or two of my own. This sounds a lot like what happened to that multi from a couple years back." "That's what I thought," Dex said, "and that's why Ms. Bish thought of me." "But she's no multi," Annabelle said. "Or at least she wasn't running an alternate a couple of years back." "I asked her specifically about that," Dex said. "It was her bona fide login." "That's scary shit," Annabelle said. "That's what I thought," Dex said sourly. "If you're scared, then I'm terrified." "You should be," Annabelle said. "If Bish is telling the truth, then access to everything is threatened. Business, banking, communication. The whole works could be cut off." "It's the lifeline of everything we do now," Annabelle explained. "Even those of us who work in a building with other people communicate over the net, access our files from the net. Hell, you need the net to buy a food brick from the store." "So, if people have found a way to prevent individual accounts from accessing the Everywhere Net," Dex asked, "they could really fuck everything up for that person." "Totally," Annabelle agreed. "You'd be locked out of your job, your money, and if you don't know anyone with skills in the physical world, you don't even have any way of getting help." "Shit," Dex said. "I'd better get Bish to send us copies of the reports of her scans as soon as possible." While he was still talking to Annabelle, he sent Bish an urgent message to that effect. "I just hope she's able to access her messages," Dex said. "That's what confuses me about this," Annabelle said, a frown creasing her face. "If someone was able to completely lock her out of the net, why did they give her access back?" What do you mean? Dex asked. Well, what's the point of locking her out and then letting her back in? If you're trying to actually stop her from getting online, why let her back on? And if you're trying to hold her access ransom, shouldn't there be some kind of demands or something? It just doesn't make sense. Dex thought. That is kind of strange. He pondered it for a moment. Could we be looking at this all wrong? He asked, thinking out loud. What if it's not some evil person out to cause havoc or scare the hell out of her? What if it's just a straight-up malfunction? Whoa, Annabelle said. That seems impossible. She sipped her drink and thought. But it would explain why there's no obvious reason for it to be happening. Now I really want to see those reports, and I've got some questions of my own I'd like answered. I'm sure that Miss Bish would be happy to let you poke around, Dex said. She seemed honestly terrified. I would be too, Annabelle said. I would be too. They each stayed for another drink, but linked out of the bar before it got too late. After spending the previous night together, they were ready for a small break from each other's company. The taste of Annabelle's lips was still lingering on Dex's mouth when he refocused on his apartment. He spent a few minutes just enjoying being offline, using the lav, looking out the small window at the early morning scene in the courtyard, determining if he was hungry or thirsty. When he felt like he'd reconnected with his physical body, he logged into the cubicle man's system. He updated the case file in Stellabish's case with Annabelle's observations, then paged over to his messenger. He sent Martina Alford, the pastor at the Light of the Simulacrum Temple, a request for a brief interview. Dex admitted to himself that Mac Larson had done a fine job, but he still always wanted to meet with clients himself. He didn't fully trust talking with avatars in M-City, but he felt that he got a better sense of the people he was dealing with if he had some direct communication, and a virtual meeting was better than nothing. The keys to an investigation often weren't found in what a person said as much as how it was said. As he reviewed the file, he wondered if it were possible that the two cases were related somehow. Both involved some kind of tampering with the fabric of the virtual reality which was M-City, and both seemed more like pranks or random incidents rather than acts perpetrated for some particular end. But Dex knew that he had a predilection to see patterns where there were not necessarily any to be found, and he tried to keep an open mind. At the back of that open mind, he wondered if it wasn't that there was a common perpetrator so much as a common cause, a deeply insidious and catastrophic bug in the global communications backbone. Chapter 6. The sun was high in the sky when Dex woke up, but he'd gotten used to the schedule. His apartment kept the window tinted almost opaque for the 8 hours Dex was sleeping, and regardless, the small hit of sleeping juice he often took before sacking out would have let him sleep through a supernova. Dex usually had his system slowly untint the windows, so that the sun's light would wake him. His small window was cracked open, and Dex could smell the tang of salt water and intertidal decay on the breeze. He swung his legs over the side of the small bed and stretched. He ran a hand over his closely cropped hair, feeling the familiar bumps of his skull. He padded over to the cupboard and got a cup of coffee going in the zapper. While it was heating, he pulled out an Econoline food brick from the large box and unwrapped it. Chewing, he took his mug over to the chair and sat. He went online and checked his messenger. Reverend Alford had agreed to a meeting later that day, and Stella Bish had sent copies of the reports from her technician. Dex didn't even open the files from Bish, knowing that he'd never understand the contents. Instead, he forwarded the whole thing to Annabelle, along with a link to the case file on the cubicle man's system. Annabelle was the premier cracker on Dex's squad back in America, and they had worked on the Reuben Cobalt murder together. That was when their relationship had moved from a professional to a personal one, though not without a fair measure of difficulty. Annabelle had been living in Nice even then, after a transfer from her day job. Dex moved a year later, not exactly following her, but happy to be closer. As far as they knew, they were the only members of Zahara Zhang's squad that didn't actually live in the same physical locale, but since the squad met mainly in Marionette City and they worked with clients all over the globe, it didn't seem to matter where they were physically located. Dex was sure that Annabelle was the most talented programmer he knew, and he suspected that she might be one of the brightest there was. She had worked out backdoor access to all kinds of parts of EverywhereNet that Dex hadn't even known existed, and she was invaluable in any case that involved the online system. He was sure that if there was a clue in Stellabish's scan reports, Annabelle would find it. He'd often suggested to her that her talents were wasted working for Omnitrack, but she liked the work. "I'm doing something useful," she'd often say. This is much more important than making a better war simulation or building vid backgrounds. Of course, that wasn't what Dex was referring to, but he knew better than to argue with her about this. She was never shy about expressing her opinions, and particularly not when they concerned her own life. Dex checked the time and saw that he had a couple of hours before he was meeting Reverend Alford. One of the great joys of leaving the life of a regular working stiff was the ability to take these natural breaks in the workday to do other things. He could have met his friend and almost colleague, Rene Biagini, who also made his own schedule, or he could run the household errands, but Dex had other ideas. After a quick shower and change of clothes, he picked up the inexpensive mandolin Annabelle had given him about a year previously. He had been a musician back in his youth, living the starving artist life on the fringes of society. After he gave it all up to become a productive member of society, he thought he'd never go back to music. Annabelle's gift of the mandolin had brought back memories, many painful, but others were surprisingly poignant. He began playing the plywood instrument, alone in his small room, but soon was playing a virtual mandolin in a small band that met in M City. The five of them played a few gigs and did reasonably well for a bunch of newcomers. After talking with some of the other musicians he met at the shows, Dex began experimenting with playing his physical mandolin instead of the virtual one, and piping the sound in as part of the band performance. The idea took off, and now both Javier, the keyboardist, and Susie, the horn player, were including virtual instruments in the mix. The band, Chemical Celeste, was developing its own small following amongst the mixed live and virtual music scene. Dex spent 90 minutes running through the set list for the band's upcoming gig, and at the end started working on a couple of new pieces. His system pinged to give him a 10-minute warning before his meeting with the Reverend, and he put the instrument back in its ultrafoam carrying case. Dex pulled up his case notes, using one eye as a viewer to his system while he puttered around the apartment. He was settling into his chair when his system pinged again, letting him know that someone was linking into his office building. He linked directly into his office and found himself materializing behind his desk, just as he heard a knock on the virtual glass door. "Mr. Dexter?" A muffled but confident and persuasive voice sounded from the hallway. "Are you in? It's Martina Alford." Dex rose and opened the door to his guest. "Come in, Reverend," Dex said, standing aside to let the woman enter. "Please," she said, "call me Martina." "Of course," Dex said, offering her the hard wooden chair. "You can just call me Dex." She smiled and nodded, settling into the seat across the desk from the detective. "So," Dex began, "I've reviewed your conversation with Lieutenant Larson, and I've gone over the image files you included. But I have a few questions for you myself, if you don't mind." "Go ahead," Alfred said. "I'll give you as much time as you need. If we don't find the person responsible for the destruction, we may never be able to rebuild." "That's a good place to start," Dex said. "How did you manage to raise the funds for the original temple, and how did your congregation meet before it was built?" "We began as a board. Members would post conversations, and we had a weekly interactive vid service. It was quite active, and a core group of members began suggesting that we could acquire our own space in M City. A whole private building is quite expensive, as I'm sure you know, Dex. "Indeed," he said. "Even renting a room isn't a minor proposition." Alfred looked around at Dex's small office and nodded. "We first went that route ourselves," she said. "One of our congregants worked part-time in a small M-City boutique and managed to broker a deal with the owner. We met in their back room for a long time, and it was such a better experience that it was probably only a year before we started talking about getting our own building. Of course, as the congregation grew, the small room in the shop was getting more and more difficult." "I didn't think that space was a constraint here," Dex said, confused. "It isn't exactly," Alfred said. "We could serve as many avatars as wanted to participate. However, there is only so much resolution bandwidth available in a smaller area. In short, everyone could see me, but I couldn't see everyone. And they couldn't interact with each other simultaneously, either. It was better than the vid feed by a long shot, but we were aching for a fuller community experience. For us, the full immersion of existence in M City is an integral part of our beliefs. Being able to worship together in the virtual experience is one of the best ways we can practice our faith. We'd been supporting ourselves with small voluntary donations, but the leaders and I decided to embark on a full fundraising campaign. It took some time, but between the generosity of our members and a special deal with a sympathetic developer, we were able to purchase a piece of res space and a building large enough to accommodate not just the current congregation, but a group as large as what we hope to grow into. The temple was the end result of years of hard work, not just for me, but for dozens of members. to see all that time, effort, and money reduced to garbage. The Reverend had been matter-of-fact in telling her story up to this point, but now Dex heard a crack in her voice. "This has all been very difficult, Mr. Dexter," she said, pulling herself together. "I understand," he said, and wondered whether or not it would be appropriate to offer a minister of religion a shot from the desk drawer bottle. He was saved from having to make the decision when she took a deep breath and gave him a weak smile. "Thank you for your sympathy," she said. "What else do you want to know?" "Well, the first thing that comes to mind," Dex said, "and forgive me if this sounds overly practical, is why don't you just reinstantiate the space from a backup? I realize that there would be expenses, but..." The Reverend shook her head. "I'm no programmer designer," she said, "and I see that you aren't either." Dex shook his head. "Well, one of the things that made our temple such an exceptional meeting space is that M-City code is, for lack of a better word, alive."
"Excuse me?"
"The code rendering the space changes as avatars interact with it," Alfred explained. "There's no realistic way to take backups of the code since it is constantly in flux. This is why we so desperately need to find the responsible party. We aren't that concerned with retribution, it's that we hope whoever took it took a snapshot of the code before it was..." Her voice cracked. "Changed." "I see," Dex said, and made a note to ask Annabelle about this. "Well, let's see what we can do." "Now, this is a difficult question," Dex began, "but I need you to think carefully and be completely honest with me."
"Of course," Alfred said, frowning.
"Can you think of anyone, any individual or group, who may have some kind of grudge against your religion?" he asked. "I know that faith can be a very emotional and controversial thing, and this wouldn't be the first time that a religious group is targeted by its detractors." Dex expected a denial or argument from Alfred, but the pastor was silent and thoughtful. "You aren't the first to suggest such a thing," she said. "Even within our congregation, this idea has been mentioned. And it is a difficult thing for me to say. I can tell you that, other than this, we've had no threatening correspondence, no protesters at our meetings, or even anyone joining our discussion groups merely to argue. Of course, there are many who do not share our views, and in other contexts I've encountered people who wish to debate the merits of our central tenets. But even then, our faith is not particularly controversial, and those exchanges are generally pleasant enough encounters." Dex didn't reply, and Alfred thought further. "Of course, I am so close to the center of our faith that I'm sure I don't have a good handle on the general opinion outsiders have of our religion. I know that I feel as if there's no great outcry against us, but I fully admit that I could easily be unaware of such a feeling." "Fair enough," Dex said. "But this act of sabotage, if that is what it was, came as a surprise to you?"
"Definitely," Alfred said, then looked at Dex quizzically.
"Do you think that it is possible that this was not a deliberate attack?" she asked. "At this stage, I'm not ruling anything out," Dex said. "It's dangerous to get tunnel vision at the beginning of an investigation."
"I see," the Reverend said. "I suppose you know best," she said.
Dex didn't know what to say to that, so smiled gently and remained quiet. "Do you have anything else?" Alfred asked. "I'd just like your permission to tour the site," Dex said, "and I may bring a colleague with me if that's all right with you."
"Absolutely," the Reverend said. "We will be unable to use the space in its current state, so any time you need to visit the temple, feel free to link in."
She passed Dex a small card, which was the representation of a direct link to the site. He accepted the card and added it to his file. "I'll also want a list of names of the members of your congregation," Dex said. "I may or may not need to speak to anyone, but if you could also mark the names of the leaders that you mentioned earlier, that would be very helpful." The Reverend frowned and shifted in her seat. "That may be more of a problem," she said. "Our faith may not be controversial, but being a member of a religious group of any kind can be, as I'm sure you know, something that a person may want to keep private." "I can guarantee discretion," Dex said, "both for the list itself, and I also will endeavor to keep my inquiries circumspect, should I need to make any."
"I'll have to discuss it with the congregation," Alfred said.
"Very well," Dex said. "You know how to get in touch with me." He stood and walked around the desk to the door. The Reverend walked to the door and extended a slim hand. Dex took it, and they shook perfunctorily. "I'll have something for you as soon as I can."
"Thank you again," Alfred said. "I'll let you know about the list one way or another soon."
"Until then," Dex said and opened the door. Alfred walked into the hallway and disappeared into a slight cloud of fog.
For
You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.